Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Good to have you on board. Busy hour coming up. We will hit the Major League Baseball card, Game 3 numbers in the NHL and the NBA, U.S. Open numbers for this week. We'll recap our bets from the weekend, tell you what we're betting tonight as well. A lot of talk today about the French Open, obviously, and what took place yesterday when Sinner, he is going to be sick for like another day or two. Got to be. I don't know how he's going to get over that loss anytime soon.
Longer than that.
Maybe. And he looked like it, too, by the way, in the post game. He just looked like someone died, to be honest. And we were talking about good luck trying to get down when it's 65-1, and sports books, you know, are offering that number on Alcaraz, but they have a real-time feed to the event, and you don't, and you might be, as you brought up, Pauly, during the break, you're watching on YouTube TV. As I was watching on YouTube TV, we are probably 90 seconds behind, and I even decreased, you can do that. There's an option on there where you can decrease the delay. I'm still way behind.
Yeah.
So if you don't know about how to decrease the delay on YouTube TV, then you're probably 2 minutes behind schedule there. And this is a good tweet. We're on X, at VSiN Live, at Mitch Moss Radio, at Pauly Howard. This is from, we'll call him Mike Duke. You can bet tennis point by point with a five-second delay. Okay, interesting. But he also said maybe somebody could chime in if you have an edge if betting from the venue or not, smiley face. And that's a terrific point because I'm sure some people do that to these tennis events. Because if you go to a live sporting event, and I've been sitting here telling that sportsbooks have real-time feeds, they are still, in some instances, maybe a good 5, 7, 8 seconds behind what's going on in the game. I know this from personal experience. Out here, college basketball, when they had March Madness a couple years ago, when Gonzaga was playing UConn, I went to those games. It was tough because of the cell reception. I was trying to get down live bets, but being at the venue, I was absolutely ahead of the sports books. And we have a buddy who lives in the Pacific Northwest who would go to Mariners games. He couldn't go to every game. It wasn't season tickets, anything like that. But he would carve out a few times when he would go to a Mariners game and he would be betting live because the real time being there for the game itself was ahead of the offshore book. And you would have a massive edge for like 8 seconds. And he would win a couple of bets and then he would leave because he didn't want him to tip off. He didn't want to like burn that account or make them think like something funny was going on. Because it was very specific bets that he was making. And he would only do it a handful of times like throughout the year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good though. Mm-hmm. That's the edge that you're talking about. So
absolutely. That's a fascinating discussion. How far are you behind? What the given sport? How many plays? How many... when it comes to point-by-point tennis and all that stuff. Absolutely.
Because
you can tell watching the hockey. I can't tell you how many times I've looked at the app, and then it's frozen. Because it means 30 seconds later, then a goal is
goal happened, yeah.
Maybe longer than that. And it's like, okay, no wonder why I couldn't bet.
Well, right? I'll tell you, too, we're way behind in Nevada because there's only one legal sports book that I know of as of right now, where you can bet on your laptop or on your desktop computer. You go to any of these other states, I think they have most of them up at desktop. That's massive to me.
Yep.
Because it's so much easier to bet on your laptop or desktop than your phone. And I think the timeout period, it's easier to log into as well. And it just, that to me, Frank B, pro bettor, has bitched about that for a long time, and I don't blame him.
And then Crack has complained. You know, he's retweeted us a couple times when we talk about when you bet it spins. And at that point, the books could play God.
Of course.
They have the information. They're ahead. You're trying to bet into something that's already been decided. And then when it spins,
they'll spin for 7, 8, 10 seconds.
They have the answers to the test already.
Yeah, they'll reject it, give you a different number at that point. How come, by the way, how come it's been accepted before when I try a bet and the numbers don't go in my favor? Oh, I'm trying to make a live bet at 2-1. They'll take it, and suddenly it moves to 4-1. Oh, that's great. Thank you. Why don't you reject that one? So as for tonight in the NBA, if you go back and look at how these teams have played in Game 3 so far, some good tweets from Julian Edlow with DK. Thunder, awful so far in Game 3s. 1-2 straight up, 0-3 ATS. They won by 6 at Memphis. They were trailing in that game by 29. Also helped that Ja Morant got hurt. They lost by 12 at Denver, Denver by 41 at Minnesota. Pacers game three this year in the postseason. 0-3 straight up and ATS. They were up 2-0 in all those series, so that's kind of big. But they lost by 16 at Milwaukee, 22 against Cleveland, and 6 to the Knicks. And this is the only time the Pacers have played a game three when coming off of a loss this year. And they are 4-0 straight up, 4-0 ATS off a loss in the playoffs. The average margin of victory, Paulie, in those four games has been by 18 points. Any of those numbers mean anything to you?
The only thing that matters to me is how OKC has struggled on the road. That's the big boy. And Stanford Steve made great points. Haliburton has to be more aggressive. I know he was had that limp when he walked off the dais there, which could be cause for concern. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he's all right. But he has to be more aggressive, get going early, and Carlisle ticked off. But then again, it's a must, essentially a must-win for OKC. SG goes off again. They've had no answer for him. And you get that guy in a game out of Caruso and Wiggins, which I don't think will happen again. So you get a better idea and feel of what's going to happen, I think, after game three. This is where I think they'll make the adjustments, Carlisle, and you'll get a better performance. And fair points, too, about Turner as well. Turner was great. And maybe, God, it's so weird. And then Toppin gives you nothing.
Yep.
But these guys are either excellent. That's why it's so frustrating betting their props.
They're totally so
inconsistent. But I throw out the 0-2 thing with Indiana because they had the series lead 2-0 in all these. So the place will be rocking. Got to be concerned about the OKCs are like a different team on the road. And I think Indiana's going to give them all they can handle here. I wish it was 2-3-2, but with 2-2-1-1-1, OKC figures to get a split, though. And then he could be laying an obscene point spread coming back in 5 and, if so, 7.
Yeah, well, so what if the Thunder pound them in Game 3? Then what do we do with the Game 4 number? Because I would
what,
be...
What are we saying? 20?
Like last night, yeah.
Okay.
It's a very comfortable win. They win by double digits.
Yeah. And the power rating is sky high. Look at this number and look at what the numbers were in Denver. I mean, they were laying more. They were up. There were 6 in the Denver games on the road.
Yeah, I'm saying that because I'm going to be intrigued by taking Indiana in one of these home games. I just don't know which one it's going to be yet because, you know, again, at one legal sports book right now, I'm looking at the screen, Oklahoma City is laying 6. That, to me, feels like an awfully high number, especially in this spot with everything that you just said. I totally agree. So I think they're going to cover and or win one of these games. But if they do cover this game and they win, then what's the game 4 number then? Are the Thunder like laying 4 in that game? Because the Pacers then are like up 2-1, or do they even go higher because it's going to be a must-have for Oklahoma City? But if, you know, what do they do with the game 4 number if Oklahoma City blows them out like I talked about? Like, I want the best, what's the ultimate game here to bet the Pacers in? It might be game 3. I talked about it with Matt Eumanns last night. We kicked around. We thought the number was going to be about 4. Maybe a 4.5. It's now 5.5 in every book, and a 6 is out there as well.
And then if you lose, then your season's on the line in game 4. Speaking of Indiana.
Yeah.
And you get a bigger number. But that's I would want them in game 3. Carlisle make the adjustments and they got buried.
Yeah, and I think people
I do think another over's in play too.
Yeah.
After I thought it was more indicative of what we're going to see moving forward with the second half of game 2.
Where are you at with how people who believe in the zigzag theory are going to be betting this game? Shouldn't they be on they're going to wait for the best number imaginable and then take the Pacers, yeah?
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing the zigzag people were absolutely on the Thunder last night. And they were right. They covered 11.5 points. And the zigzag's been pretty damn good in the playoffs this year. And so if you're betting in that, you know, with that philosophy, then, you know, again, Carlisle's awesome. The crowd's going to be absolutely bonko. Wes Reynolds is going to the game.
Oh, really?
How about that?
Oh, we got to talk to him.
Good for him.
That's awesome.
It's an awesome move.
Yes.
But so they're going to be jacked up the whole time.
Yeah.
Be an awesome scene. And I'm guessing those bettors are going to be on them, you know, grabbing those points. I can't imagine it goes high. Does it go higher than 6?
I don't think so.
I can't. Man.
How about the hedging posture? What do you do with the hedge now? OKC minus a game and a half, minus 150. Or SGA MVP minus 475.
Are you talking about if you had Pacers tickets?
Your Pacers tickets.
You had to bet Thunder after game 1.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the play.
Someone has a big ticket on the Pacers and said, oh, he wants to play, oh, he wanted to play OKC minus -1.5, $1.10. I go, no, you lose both.
Of course you can.
Go, don't do that. Go seven.
That's the last thing you want to do is lose both.
You have to suck
bets.
It up and lay the 280.
You don't want to do that. That's like the reverse middle.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. You're going to hate yourself. Mm-hmm. You're in an unbelievable spot. You got to make some money on this somehow.
Yeah.
If you're holding, like this guy. Email here, ftm@vsin.com. This is from Steven. We brought this up on May 21st, that Sam Bennett is a guy you want to look at for the Conn Smythe. He grabbed him at 100-1. So he's the cash out is currently 15 times the bet.
All right.
He's hedged so far with McDavid and Draisaitl to try to protect himself. Got to try to make money on that ticket.
And DraftKings also has posted a new double, Game 3. To win Game 3 and win the series, OKC $1.50.
Oh, no, that's outstanding.
That's good. And that can help you out with your hedge, too.
Yep.
Have you ever been injured in Nevada in a car crash, a slip and fall, because someone else was careless? In moments like that, what you do next really matters. Al Lasso, involved in the largest slip and fall in the United States. You need Lasso Injury Law in Vegas, not your typical personal injury firm. Boutique Law Office gives you one-on-one attention. You're not just a case number. You're a real person with a real story, and they'll fight for you like family. Over 20 years of experience, millions recovered. Al and his team bring passion and purpose to every case. Whether you're local or coming from out of state, Al puts it simply. When someone's been hurt, they don't need excuses. They need answers, support, and results. Call 702-625-8777. Free consultation, 702-625-8777. Lasso Injury Law, built on purpose, driven by results. LassoInjuryLaw.com.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
All right, no day baseball today. We do have games starting this hour, though. Some good matchups overall, like this one. The Cubs are at the Phillies. Boyd takes on Wheeler. The Phillies are in some rough shape, man, right now. Swept by the Pirates. Offense not hitting. Bryce Harper is injured. Look at that, by the way. Was that not a $1.45 earlier? When we had the screen up, or was that maybe for the first five? The Phillies are down to a -126 favorite here at Circa. Cubs +113. There is this Wheeler at home in his career with Philadelphia in 73 games. ERA is 2.65. FIP is 2.99. 10 Ks per nine. 28% K rate. A sub-1 whip and a 26% hard hit rate. Maybe under here? I like betting these first three unders.
Yeah.
The first five total is 3.5.
For what it's worth, Hap, his own Wheeler, hitting .450 against him. And this is just, what a funk. I did not see this coming. Lost 9 of 10, can't hit. 5 in a row, and 4 of those games they only scored a run. Swept by the Pirates. Amazing.
These two teams have been like the best first five teams in baseball for most of the year. Seems like a pretty dead even matchup.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Cubs +0.5 run, -110 in the first five?
Sounds good. Phillies can't hit. I'm with you. What do you want to do in the Battle of Ohio, which goes in half an hour? It's Wade Miley for the Reds, who was atrocious in the minors, had an ERA of 9. The flip side, Cleveland struggles against lefties. They are $1.60. I think they'll touch up Miley. Ramirez has got the 34 in a row on base streak, and Santana has owned him. He's hitting .467 against Miley.
Okay, so a couple of ways I think that you might want to approach it, Paulie, is that, okay, I know you're saying about Miley. Now, his K prop is 2.5 tonight. 2.5. Keep this in mind. Opposing starting pitchers against Cleveland, they are currently on a 12-2 run over their K prop. So that has been no problem here. Can he get the 3? That's all we're asking.
How long is he going to go? I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Can he strike out the side in the first and... rip off the Band-Aid, bada-bing, bada-boom, it's a winner?
No.
So
he wasn't fooling anyone in the minors, I'll tell you that.
Good point. Another, Ortiz walks the ballpark.
Yep.
His prop tonight is 2.5. You don't get as much juice as you did in his last start, but that might be something to consider. And then Christian Encarnacion Strand is blazing hot, man. A home run in 3 straight games, overall 7-13 run.
Right. Since you're there, too, Benson, 3 in a row, he's hit a bomb against Cleveland. 4 home runs, 7 RBIs. He's been awesome against them, too.
Yeah, that was the previous series they played where that kid was absolutely on fire. And Jose Ramirez on a stretch here, last 7 days, .391 average, a double homer, and 4 stolen bases. But it always seems like Jose Ramirez is like in a hot streak. So the Guardians are 5-15-1, their last 21 games in the first five. Not great there, Johnny.
Yep. Not good, Bob. No. How about Atlanta, $1.80 on the road? It is Sale, but they've lost 14 of 17 and 7 in a row. Sale against Savali. Sale, a 1.63 ERA last 9. Milwaukee's hot. You got one team won 10 of 13, another team's lost 14 of 17, yet they're $1.80 on the road.
Okay, so, man, I can't lay that number with Atlanta. There's no way, even though it's Sale. But with him, are you okay going over 7.5 Ks? He's on a 6-1 overrun. And in recent games, he has struck out 10, 10, 8, 8, 6, which was the under, 8 and 10. So you're talking about 3 games with 8.
Wrong.
3 other games, double digits.
Yeah.
He has to get to 8, though, tonight. I'd rather lay like, I wish it was 6.5, like minus 120. But that would, you know, that wasn't going to happen.
That's strong. And Pallante under 3.5. Toronto, fewer strikeouts.
Yeah, and opposing pitchers are on a 9-1 under run against the Blue Jays overall.
Yep. I think those are two good ones.
What has to happen here with the Blue Jays for you to buy in?
In terms of what? I think they can be a playoff team.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Best record since May 28th? Why not?
That correlates with the other team that's red hot in that division, and that's the Rays.
14 of 18 they've won. Number one in runs scored and runs allowed going back.
So our buddy Ian is checking in. He looked at the schedule. They have played 43 home games so far, 22 on the road. Remember, because they played 19 at home in August or in April.
Yeah.
He said he checked last night. They have a 12-game road trip in August on the West Coast. And they play like 7 home games in the entire month of August. Maybe one reason not to buy in on this team for any futures whatsoever. It's a good angle. Yep. They had to burn all those early games in April before the weather got, 600 degrees. So that's what they wanted to do. Got it done.
Right.
Merrill Kelly has been awesome with his K prop, and it is 6-0 over in his last 6 starts. It's 5.5 tonight against a Mariners team that they do strike out. They're not like top of the league like they were in previous years. But one thing with Kelly to keep in mind is that his props have been like 3.5, 4.5, 5.5 in these games. Going back, and he has, for the most part, like absolutely crushed them. Like, never, no doubters whatsoever for the. And the Diamondbacks also in the first 5, 13-5-4 last 22 games. And this is a team, Arizona, they don't strike out. Hancock goes tonight for the Mariners. I'm not a big fan. And opposing pitchers are 10-3 under last 13 games with their K prop against Arizona.
And I have an update. He's not going to, Springs will not start. It's going to be Holman for the A's. So, yeah, forget those Trout numbers I gave you, unless it's Holman's an opener and they bring in Springs.
That could happen. That's been happening a lot lately.
Trout's hitting .444 against Springs. The other thing is Kikuchi walks over, which you talked about, and also props on Wilson and what he's doing. Hitting .461, 12 RBIs last 19 games. Incredible numbers. Hitting .500 going back. For the A's and what he's doing. So you can grab his props as well. And I can't believe May and the Dodgers are $1.30 on the road. As bad as he's been on the road, tough stretch. I should have been stronger on the Cardinals Friday. Ugh. Gray set them up and put them down. But again, they got so many injuries with the rotation and how they're piecing it together with who's pitching.
Mm-hmm.
But Pavetta's been great against L.A., 1-1 with an ERA under 2 and 5 starts. And this is the first meeting of the year. Obviously, they meet 7 times in the next 10 days, and it's their first meeting since that epic playoff series they had when the Dodgers shut their offense down.
So I think you're going to be right, by the way, with Pavetta's very good at home for what it's worth. I think that's worth probably a lot. Petco, obviously very good for pitchers. It's like a 1.7 ERA. He has much better numbers at home than he does on the road. And one thing you brought up, I'm pretty sure that Holman's going to have to be the opener tonight because, to your point, you said Springs has horrible numbers against Trout.
Yeah.
Trout is batting 3rd in the lineup. So they probably just want Holman to go in there and face that top once, and then Springs can go in and take. I'm trying to see if I can find a K prop based on that, but that's typically when books are going to pull him down off the board. So I'll keep digging here. The Kikuchi numbers are, again, something to really consider. Overall, last 4 games for Kikuchi, he has walked 5, 4, and 4 batters, and he has more than 5 walks per 9 innings. and he leads, which is the highest rate in all of baseball. That also correlates to him leading the entire league with 40 walks overall in 69 innings, and you can get plus money tonight on Kikuchi to go over 2.5 walks in the game.
I got two more for you. We're about 20 minutes out. Pirates at home again. I don't mind the $1.20 with the Pirates against the Marlins, but Eury Pérez makes his first start in 628 days. Had Tommy John surgery. His K prop is 5.5. That's aggressive. How long's he going?
That's the thing. He's got great stuff, and he certainly can strike out like 10 batters on any given start. He's that good. But the first game back, his expectations are to get to 6.
Yeah. In 630 days? Man.
I don't know about that.
And you want to fade the Red Sox off the big Sunday night win and that series against the Yankees, or just could be a bet on Tampa and Baz, who's 3-0 with a 2.37 against Boston going back, beat them and struck out 11 Red Sox in April. And we mentioned the 14-4 record, which is the best in baseball going back as well.
Yeah, we got a good tweet on this from Brian. Bayo's career numbers against Tampa. He gives up several hits every single game, and the earned runs are 4-5-3-3-5-3. He gives up plenty of runs every single game against his team. So, and the walks, that's another thing here to maybe attack, is that I want nothing to do with his Ks, and maybe look at the walks with him as well. So an angle there, maybe playing. Well, we brought up the over in this game because the Red Sox have the second highest clip in all of baseball, averaging more than 5 runs per game. So there'll be something there, too, between those two.
The Giants, who are hot at Colorado tomorrow. Harrison against Palmquist. What do you think the number is in Colorado?
It's Harrison, so 220.
235.
Yeah, I Harrison's a boy.
Yeah. Betting on sports, why not try the races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up firstbet.com, promo code VSIN200. Get a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Head to firstbet.com today.
We'll discuss betting the U.S. Open with Andrew Cayley from covers.com up next. Does he have one of the big guns winning the tournament this week? We'll ask him coming up.
This is Follow the Money on VSIN.
Super stoked for this week because of the U.S. Open. In theory, it's gonna play out, Paulie, where it's exceedingly difficult for the best players in the world, and that's what we love here. We don't want to see 29 under from 5 different guys fighting it out to win a tournament. And we head out here to the Progressive Guest Line as Andrew Cayley joins the program now, senior betting analyst at covers.com. Andrew, thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. This goes back to the Sunday of the PGA Championship when Scotty was taking it down, and I was shopping around at the price for the U.S. Open, and I saw like plus 480 was available out here at a book in Las Vegas. So I'm like, I got to take it. I have to, because I think it's going to be, one of the best players in the world will win this tournament this weekend. So now he's plus 275. What is your advice with Scotty at that number?
I'm putting a unit on him. I still am at that number. We're getting into kind of Tiger Woods territory with how good he's been. And he's just not as charismatic as Tiger was, obviously. So I feel like we're just not appreciating as great as he's been. Tiger in 2009 was plus 190 heading to the U.S. Open, I believe. So yeah, we're getting close to that space at plus 275, but man, you're like, in your head, you're like, man, I shouldn't bet. This is a golf market. It's an outright market. And then Thursday will happen. It'll be on the leaderboard and within a stroke or two. And you'll see the number at minus 150 or minus 200. And you'll be like, dang, I wish I had bet that plus 275. So he's got the game to attack what is going to be a very difficult course, very long rough, 3 ridiculously long holes, 2 600-yard par fives. Ooh. A 289-yard par 3. You were saying it. This is the kind of course where people are watching because they want to see that train wreck. Where it's not going to be these huge scoring numbers. Guys are going to excel who can avoid mistakes, and Scotty is obviously the best in the world at that. So I don't think you really want to miss the boat on it. I'm not going to like put the mortgage on it or anything like this, but I'll put a unit on Scotty to win this week.
What do you think the winning score is?
I have a prop here. I'm taking the under 278.5, and I'm hoping that the winning score is under that. So I'm guessing it's about four under par, I'll say. Dustin Johnson played an incredible final round back in 2016, and he ended at 5 under par, I believe, in that year. Really, really awesome round of golf from DJ in that one. Tough to see the way he's playing right now, but he seems to be happy with his life, I guess, so good for him. But yeah, Scotty is very much capable of that. He has the accuracy and distance off the tee to avoid some of the bunkers, and he is a fantastic short game. We all know his biggest flaw is those putts from like 6 feet and in, basically, and he's been hitting those this year too. So Scotty is still got, even if it's a plus 275, I still think there's value on it.
Okay, so then as we work our way down the board a little bit, Bryson is in that plus 750 range. Then you get to John Rahm and McIlroy after his awful weekend this past weekend, now at around 12-1 each. But then if you go down another tier, that's when you drop in to like the 22-25-1 range. First of all, Andrew, is there anybody that I just mentioned between DeChambeau, Rahm, or McIlroy that you like, or do you have to get down into the 20s before you're going to pick off your next guy?
I don't hate Rahm this week. He's kind of pulled his game together, and we know he can win at a U.S. Open, and he's got that game. He's like, this course, the boomers will have the advantage. He's obviously still a boomer. He's always been great off the tee, especially in strokes gained off the tee. So he's the one I would look at. Bryson scares me a little bit, despite the fact that he should dominate a course like this, with his length and his creativity and his imagination around the greens. But his iron game has just been kind of off in the Masters and the PGA Championship. So that's giving me a little pause. Guy I am looking at a little further down, like you said, Xander Schauffele. He's kind of getting his game together a little bit now. Another guy who we now say he can win in these big moments. It was forever that we weren't saying that about him, but obviously the injury has held him back so far in 2025, but there's been some signs of life here, and he's got that accuracy off the tee when things are going well. Surprisingly long hitter as well. 22-1. I think he's a little underpriced here. I think he should be more in the 16-18-1 range. So I think there's some value in Xander this week.
All right, very good. Follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, Andrew Cayley. He's with Covers.com. You can follow him on X. He is at Covers_Cayley. So there's Scheffler plus 275, X 22-1. Then you want to drop down a little bit. State your case for Corey Connors at 60-1.
Corey Connors, he's known as a ball striker, right? And yep, he isn't coming off the greatest weekend in Canada. Like, he obviously wanted to perform better at the RBC Canadian Open, finished T27. But he's been T27 or better in 10 of his last 11 tournaments. He's got 4 top 10s in that stretch. He was top 10 at the Players, top 10 at the Masters. His game should play really well. And like I said, he's known as a ball striker, but he isn't given enough credit for being very, very good off the tee. He ranks 10th on tour in strokes gained off the tee this season. And if he can avoid mistakes, then he's going to have a chance with that iron game to put some things close and make a run at this thing. I think at 60-1, with some of the other names you see around there, like, he is in a class above those guys at that level.
This guy's polarizing. He'll drive you nuts. You know, at one point he'll have a meltdown, but state the case for Hovland.
It's probably not a good case for Hovland, but it's like, I see the 60-1 that he's at right now, and I can't help myself, because Hovland's ceiling is number one ranked player in the world, right? Like, you see that potential, you see that ability. He's another one of these guys who can hit it a mile if it's going right for him, and he's another guy with great creativity, and his iron play is excellent as well. But it seems to be all mental with him, because he comes out and he talks like he's golfing with you or I. He's like, man, I have no idea where the ball's going today.
Yep.
Like,
oh, yep.
Great. You're a professional. Like, good to know that you're one of us too. So this was a straight, I saw the number next to his name, and I think that's at the point where I'm comfortable with betting him again. I'm not saying I'm expecting him to do it, but 60-1, I think there's some value there.
Yeah, very good. I do that all the time, like in these majors as well. Like, how is that guy that big of a number? So that's appealing enough to me to grab him. Top 10s then. You said Connor's obviously outright, but you like him at 4-1, and also Hébert?
Yeah. We've been kind of a little disappointed in his performance this season. He's dropped back after those impressive showings in the majors last year, but everyone says, and everybody who's watching golf knows that he's got a really bright future ahead of him. Once again, another guy who's, I believe he ranks 13th in strokes gained off the tee. So stay out of the rough. You got to just stay out of the rough here, which is another reason why we are kind of like a little iffy on Rory McIlroy this week, because it's the thing with his driver, and who knows where that thing's going right now, and he doesn't seem to even know 100% where that thing's going. But if you're accurate off the tee, you stay out of that really crazy rough that they've got at Oakmont there, then you're going to have a chance to attack some really, really large greens. And Åberg has proven that he is up for these occasions. So I think that's another guy. I think he's 35-1 at this point. Maybe he's dropped to 30-1. Not a terrible price, but I think he's there on the leaderboard come Sunday. So we'll be talking about him.
Yeah, I grabbed a piece of him over the weekend as well for this upcoming U.S. Open. Paulie loves betting the yes-no on a hole-in-one. Do you think we get one this week with this course?
I want to say no, but the field's so big. Like, it's not like the Masters where there's only 80 people in the field.
Mm-hmm.
One of the par threes is going to be a no. Obviously, it's 289 yards.
Crazy.
So you're eliminating one of your par threes off the board with that. I think my gut says no, but it's just obviously it's one of the more fun props to bet when you're watching. Like, you want to have fun when you're betting golf, right? It can be so stressful sometimes. So cheering on a hole-in-one is one of the more fun things you can do.
Very good. You can follow Andrew on X. Again, he's at covers_Kaylee for covers.com as well. Andrew, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate that, and best of luck this week.
Thanks, guys. Good luck with all your bets.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And he joined us on the Progressive guest line. All right. To what he was saying about Scheffler, the reason why I grabbed him at plus 480, I think he can win the tournament, but it's not like I made a huge bet on it. This might sound dumb to some people. I did it just in case he wins to cover my other bets. Because the guy's that good.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with it.
It will not be a big winning, a win a little bit. It will not be anything to write home about if he takes it down. But
Playoff plus 450 at DraftKings. No hole in one, minus 160.
Well, here you go. Real-time action. Real-time response on the show. This is from Tom on X, who just tweeted me. He walked the course today.
Come on.
He cannot see under par winning the tournament. This place will play way harder than the last two times I was here in 07 and in 16.
Really?
One person's opinion. Yep.
Okay.
But that's a great tweet, Tom. 270, thank you.
278 and a half he gave out.
So par 70.
Okay.
You have to be two under then. You're going to go under. Think about the expectations. What the market is saying.
Then the Ben Griffin video got everyone talking too. You drop the ball and you can't even see it. As you said, right? Albatross 14-1. Wire to wire 7-1. You can take the field versus Scheffler, McIlroy, Rahm, DeChambeau. The field's $1.20.
I don't want it.
Don't want it.
I don't want it. We'll recap our weekend, tell you what we're betting tonight, and moving forward with In Pocket Plays here on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Determine the winner of any given college basketball game.
Someone gives you 10,000 to 1 on anything. You take it. Take it. Take it.
I'll bet you 20 bucks I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3 to 1 odds.
Nope.
5 to 1.
Nope.
10 to 1.
You're up.
Incredible action over the weekend. It was a rough one. You could have made money, though, in play if you decided to do so. Sabalenka was $7 in play. She blows it. Coco wins. And Sinner, Alcaraz was 65-1. The Sinner meltdown as well. Before the series started, will we have a game that goes to double overtime? No. That cashes. That's a loser. So that graded as a loser. That goes against me on Friday night.
Well, can you believe both games, by the way, went to overtime already?
Yeah, how about that?
Obviously you can't. You're betting the other way.
Yeah. Sixth time only that's happened. Start the series. No hat trick, $1.90. No shutout, minus 120. Panthers in six, plus 475. Bennett, Conn Smythe, 30-1. 10-plus goals in a game, no minus 170. NBA Finals, under 5.5 games, all the pending. And then the new tonight, there's always something fun to look at and root on, root with for or against in Major League Baseball. Piante, under 3.5 strikeouts. Toronto's hot, fewest strikeouts in the league. Minus 160 to the under. No hole in one. U.S. Open, minus 160. Back on it. Ties pay full. Ben Griffin, top five. 9-1.
All right, pal. Good luck tonight, this week. The golden sombrero for me on Friday. No good. But, you know, Rufus Peabody, one of the most successful sports bettors in the world. His podcast has been called Bet the Process for a long time. I really loved the process that I had on Friday. And to run down what happened in the Brewers-Padres game, Patrick was awesome, gave up one run. Yeah. And this is baseball's a funny game. Jackson Chourio came to the plate. I had the Brewers first five up. What was it, plus a half a run? Minus half a run. I think it was minus half a run. And they were trailing 1-0. Jackson Chourio came to the plate three times in the first five innings and scorched three laser beams that were hit either directly at the outfield, or one guy tracked it down and, you know, it was to the track, could almost was a home run. Those are the breaks. And I would bet the Brewers first five in that situation again today, for sure. Like I would bet Christian Yelich. Vasquez is no great shakes. Yelich was scorching hot. No good. That was a loser. Soderstrom, over total bases, no good. And Juan Soto had three hits in the game against the Rockies.
Oh.
Nobody was on the pond. No ducks in the pond. So the RBIs prop was also a loser. Friday was not a good day. Not a good day, but I like the process overall. I have SGA right where I want him. He's averaging, what, 36 points per game so far in the finals? I need him to average below 33.5. He's had 38 and 34 so far. He had 6 points in the second quarter last night as the game was playing out. And then killed it again. Now I need like a, give me like a 17.
What a blowout. You
yeah.
A blowout in game three. Either team doesn't
yep.
play a lot.
Or 20 in one of these games, then we're talking.
Yep.
So that's pending. And as for tonight, Freddie Freeman, over 1.5 hits, runs, RBIs, played that at minus 110. Has very good numbers in his career against Nick Pivetta, batting 333, some home runs, some doubles, there's a triple in there as well. And these are numbers that I have bet over the course of time. They're not available right now, but I mentioned these on the air the Monday after the PGA, that I grabbed Scheffler at plus 480. I grabbed DeChambeau at 15-1 for a nice bet. And over the weekend, I added Rahm 14-1 and Ludwig Åberg at 25-1, which is a number that you can still get. So I'm putting it out there for the record for the U.S. Open plays that I have this week.
Wouldn't that be something if someone wins like two over, three over?
That'd
be great.
What are, would you love that part
yes,
of it?
Yes, yes. That would be awesome.
I want to see somebody so frustrated that they throw a club.
Yeah.
Now, Wyndham Clark actually did in a recent tournament.
Uh-huh.
And he almost hit a person in the head. But I want to see him just like get so pissed off at the course that they take it and they throw it like 40 yards. What would they do?
Yeah. To speaking of that, too, I'll do the read right now. Let me do this first. Want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a full year for just $199. Free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Applebaum. No nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. The morning email from Bill 80, every best bet, every host, every guest, the betting splits from DK and Circa, the dog videos, our NFL betting guide, which drops July 1st. Can't wait for that. Limited time offer, code BOOK. Promo code BOOK to sign up, VSiN.com/subscribe. So it reminds me, I think it's in the movie Old School, when Will Ferrell's doing the yelling and the rant. You got to keep your composure. You got, and he's screaming. Is this...
Does he pick up the chair and hit the lockers as well?
I think so. Is this standard, what Sabalenka does? Is this... Because like Chris Everett was saying, it's no big deal, and this is kind of like the arrangement, and that just her coach just has to sit there and take it, and just she likes to yell and vent and air her frustrations over how she's playing or if it's a mistake. And she just became unglued in that final against... But she was doing it against... Iga too. So I'm watching this. I go, is she always act like this?
Must be, yeah.
She's the number one player in the world, but man, she's slamming the ball. She's yelling. She's looking up at the coach. And when I was watching the Iga match, Everett was like, oh, okay, nothing. I mean, is this something that goes on a regular basis?
When she goes out and grabs a bite to eat?
Right. Well, no, I'm just – no, not saying that. But when how she plays – Tucker just went deep for the Cubs. But this is something where
– Hey, there's a drive by Castellanos.
I mean, it's right. You got it. You can't play like that. You can't – and then the excuses afterwards about
– Is that John Rahm to you, what he used to be like?
Yes. That's fair.
But he wouldn't take it out on any person per se? He would just be pissed off at himself?
Because you knew the implosion was coming. She's as bad as she was, 70 unforced errors, broken 9 times, still wins the first set. And then Coco takes her out quick in the second set, and then, you know, she loses the match. Because, like I said earlier, she was minus $7 in play. But you can't have a temper tantrum every time you lose a point or make a mistake. You got to focus.
Could you date somebody like that?
No way. Absolutely not.
That'd be one and done?
Yeah, well, I'm also trying to think about what the... And I'm sure it's working out, because she's playing so well and making finals a number one player. But what do you think? Is this what you sign up for when you're the coach? He's just sitting there the whole time. I find the whole thing interesting.
Well, I'm sure at some point it's like benign to him. He's totally used to it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
like it's a big Festivus thing. She's just going to air her grievances.
The whole time, and he's going to sit there and take it.
Uh-huh.
Nothing he can do about it unless he wants to, you know, work with some other tennis player or find something else to do with his career or find a new career. That's what he signed up for. I mean, she makes a lot of money. I'm guessing that he's compensated well. And, you know, that's part of the dig. That's part of the deal. That would not be fun. How could that be fun?
I also, Peyton Manning would come to mind, too. In the early days in Indianapolis, the body language. But that, I guess it was nothing like this. I mean, she is slamming the ball. She's looking, you know, yelling at herself.
Max Scherzer would get pissed off on the mound.
Okay.
Like he'd stare down umps, right?
I don't know. I just
give him a piece of his mind.
So that's why I had the live bet Coco as well. I'm like, she's coming unglued here. And I want to take the composed Coco.
Mm.
And also took her out no problem. Did you at what point did you think Alcaraz could do this?
Well, so I thought he was shot when the debris got in his eye. And there's no doubt that it impacted his play for the next, call it 30 minutes to an hour. But you could also start to see that his shot making was just so much better than Sinner for a stretch of time. I would say that when it was the fourth set, right? Yeah, because when he came back to win the third one.
I jumped in when it was, I think, 3-2 in the third set. I'm like, why is the price so low?
Right. There was some point, I can't remember exactly when, but at some point I told myself, he's going to come back and win this thing. And then somehow, some way, Sinner came roaring back in the fifth set. And I thought, oh my God, he's going to actually steal this from the guy.
Yeah. And this is from where I'm by no means an expert on this. I used to follow it religiously growing up.
Same here.
But and I know the sport has changed, but this is from people who follow it, saying the shot making and what they did in that match yesterday was incredible.
Really, like
you said earlier, to do it for 5.5 hours, that was the second longest Grand Slam ever and the longest French Open men's final ever. To be out there for almost 6 hours and to still have that.
I can't imagine.
Oh, man.
I can't imagine with how much energy
the degree
that
of difficulty, the shot making, the returns, what they were doing.
Tracking down everything.
The Sinner play. How good was the Sinner when he was dead?
Yeah.
And he
barely got it, yeah.
It was a huge sequence.
How about some of the drop shots that got over
The Sinner drop shot, yeah.
I mean, like you said earlier, if we can get, on both sides, men's and women, a Wimbledon and a U.S. Open like that, 2025 is going to be an unbelievable year.
Primetime up next. Tim Murray, Matt Eumanns cashing out. 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. by the books, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m.